everybody, we're here to talk about Mission Impossible 73, Operation Fallout. the one where Tom Cruise uses the power of Scientology to defeat Superman.
Before
he can snap every neck in the planet. Yeah, and he defeats the power of the death itself, death and aging itself.
Mm-hmm.
The internet's losing its mind about this film. It's got 97% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Jim Jones, what you think of the movie?
That seems a little high. I enjoyed the movie, but 97%? Let's get real, people.
Yeah.
This movie wasn't that good.
Yeah.
It was a really good action movie.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest here, I had a lot of trouble following what was happening. And now it may be a symptom of me having not seen Mission Impossible in like four Mission Impossible movies. So in 18 years, I looked it up.
I only
2000 was the last time.
You saw three?
Number two. I never saw three, and I never saw four. Yeah.
Okay. So I only missed Rogue Nation, and I didn't realize I missed it until I went to this. Until I missed this movie. Like, oh,
is that when
the
stuff with the main, with one of the villains in this happened?
The Scottish terrorist, okay. And I think they introduced the female super spy in that one, or maybe the one before.
I'll see. Well,
I
was lost at the beginning. Very lost. And they kind of clue you in if you haven't seen previous, but not really.
I didn't feel like I had trouble following the plot. In fact, there was like three different points in the movie where, because this is a big bamboozler. All right.
Yeah.
This movie goes for the rock'em sock'em, rope-a-dope every 15 minutes, and mm-hmm. I was well ahead of a few of the big ones. And I don't know if that was the problem. I guess this movie felt campy to me. Like it was almost a parody of the Mission Impossible format where they had people coming in and saying, well, this is stupid. Why does anyone ever fall for it? Like they were breaking the fourth wall and lampshading left and right. And it felt a little weird because, like, Mission Impossible's of recent years, I feel like I've gone more towards gritty realism where, like, Mission Impossible 2, that's the one I think that John Woo directed, is, I think, very campy.
Yeah.
It is, you know, got ridiculous action sequences and stuff. Every one of these action sequences were jaw-dropping and sick.
Uh-huh.
But much like Fast and Furious franchise, the connecting tissue felt pretty thin. Like, We thought of a bomb-ass stunt that we can do around Notre Dame with it in the background. Let's think of a reason why we should be in... Now let's go to Hungary. Now let's do... Like, I don't know. I was expecting to see high 60s on Rotten Tomatoes. So when I saw 97%, I just assumed Tom Cruise slit 1,000 junior Scientologists' throats and used their psychic energy to bamboozle the world's press with the power of his broken ribs and ankle.
Okay, I'm glad we're on the same page as far as it's not being, like, an amazing film, you know? Like, action set pieces, yes. Yes, all the way. It's they're some of the most amazing things I've seen
Maybe that should be enough, right?
It was for me, honestly. Like, I didn't come out of this movie going, man, I wish I hadn't seen that. I was a little confused by the plot because I didn't know the characters and their histories. But other than that, like, I was blown away by it.
Yeah, there's a couple, man, I don't, to talk specifically, I'd have to almost get into spoilers, but I'll put this out there. There was one scene that I've only seen the last Twilight movie try to get away with, where it's just like, and they did it two or three times. And
okay, that's
going
to
have
to be a tease for the spoiler section, because I really want to know which one you're talking about.
Like, I just don't know about that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's I didn't like the last James Bond either. So this was a better movie. At least this was fun, and the action scenes were really inventive, and it wasn't entirely, I guess, a grim affair. It had some humor, like Simon Pegg's really funny. Ving Rhames, like the fact that, you know, he's been around since the very first Mission Impossible and looks like he's 30 years older than Tom Cruise now is kind of entertaining. And I have affection for the characters. I like Ethan Hunt. I like the fucking Mission Impossible theme. Mm-hmm. I just wish it was, man, and not even smart is the right word for it. It's just, it's like Fast and Furious. It's just an excuse to have a bunch of action scenes. I don't know why that's not enough for me anymore.
I'm always feeling a little off kilter. So, you know, to talk about my confusion a little bit, I'm in these kind of movies where I know going in, like, this movie is about tricking people.
Yeah.
And in the course of it, tricking the audience quite a few times, I never feel like I find my footing. Even when they do the final reveal, and they're like saying, okay, this is how it is, I'm still waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because I always think there's another shoe, because the movie has trained me to think that. And so I just never feel comfortable in these movies. So the only thing I really have to latch onto is the action stuff.
So I'll even say, because here's why I think the action scenes are a little disappointing. I'll just give you one random example. Mm-hmm. I'll probably give six more in the spoiler section. Tom Cruise in a car chase does this trick three times, where he just floors it into an intersection that's just like crisscrossing with traffic. Mm-hmm. He finds the perfect window, and he doesn't even like steer for it. It just he just guns it and goes through it. And like if you are in a car and you see Tom Cruise fly through an intersection of BMW, you slam on the fucking brakes because there's about to be a wall of Swiss police or Hungarian police or Vienna police, and you are going to die. Yep. You are going to die in droves to be the blockade for Tom Cruise. He does like three times in one thing, and I guess that's where like the Bourne Identity never did that. Like in the first one, it's like, you know, he's driving this little rabbit, this Volkswagen rabbit, just revving the nuts off of it. But like he never. They would never. Jason Bourne let himself get cornered, because if you get cornered, you're screwed. Whereas Tom Cruise, it's like, three different times in three different situations, he comes to a part where he looks this hallway, nothing but goons. This hallway, nothing but goons. This hallway, nothing but goons. This other, okay, all four cardinal directions have been covered, nothing but goons. He keeps doing a 360 as the camera. There's a fifth passage, goon-free.
Yeah.
Like, just don't, like...
The goons always just miss that one passage.
Just if you got to get to the part where the only way Tom Cruise can win is just blindly drive through traffic, don't do that. Especially don't do it three times in one car chase.
I'm with you. Those moments started to feel silly.
Right. So like I said, I got other examples, but that's where it's like even the stunt scenes, to make them even bigger and more ridiculous, like the illogical outcome should be a Blues Brothers crash. But they just move on. They you have three separate Blues Brothers crashes in one thing. It's just like sometimes maybe the stunt should be a little bit smaller and more intimate with actual stakes where like these people could actually get hurt or... I don't know. That's my as non spoilers I want to get review of Mission Impossible.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have a ton more to say about it. If you really like action movies, I would say definitely go see this.
Yeah. It's the state of the art for and you know, or as many, like, I know there's some people to give Tom Cruise shit for this because, you know, he's essentially taken jobs from stuntmen, but there is something really visceral seeing Tom Cruise's face hanging off the side of a mountain, and no, like, yeah, there's safety cables and all that stuff, but there's very little green screen. He's actually doing a lot of this stuff, and he's 57 years old.
Yeah. God.
Someone posted this incredible fact that I verified.
Okay.
Wilford Brimley.
Yeah. I saw this.
Was older in the movie Cocoon, where he's playing a grandpa in like a Florida retirement home.
No, he's younger.
Younger. He's actually younger in Cocoon playing a grandpa in a retirement home than Tom Cruise is swinging from skyscrapers and helicopters and glaciers and shit.
Yeah. No, it's insane. I mean, we talk about this every time we watch a Tom Cruise movie, but God damn it, he just does not look anywhere near his age.
And he doesn't even have like the Hollywood thing where like he looks like he's Botoxed an inch of his life. He just looks like he sleeps in a age retarding coffin.
He either does that or he has the world's best plastic surgeon. I mean, maybe there's something you could do to Tom Cruise's face make him look that good at that age.
Yeah.
With plastic magic. I don't know, but it's incredible.
Or Scientology is real, and we're just all we're just persecuting the actual witches that live in our world. I don't know.
Give it 8 more years.
Yeah.
And if Tom Cruise still looks as good as he does now,
I might be in a cult on Scientology. Pack? Yeah. If he's
2025. Let's go to 2025.
Okay. So he'll be like 65.
If Tom
Cruise can start withdrawing from a Social Security account without penalty
and still looks
and
like
he's
he
still
does
doing
today.
This, then I'm going to pop in. I'm gonna, you know, I'll have my email. I'll, I'll have my thetan level tested. I'll hook up to an email. I'll just stick my toe in the water. Because what the hell? At some point, you got to say it's science now, right?
No, it's crazy.
Jesus Christ. Let's talk about trailers, eh?
Okay, so I have a weird trailer situation. I go to this theater when I don't have to be down at the office before I see a movie, because we saw it over the weekend. I go to a different theater where they serve like food at your seats and stuff, and they give you menus and you can order all that stuff. And they started playing the trailers while everyone was just ordering the food, and the lights were full bright.
So
I was just sitting there, you know, looking at the menu. Maria Menounos saying, "Oh, first look, whatever." I just showed you a bunch of movies you don't care about.
Right. This is for ABC Family. The Harry Potter, the Endless Summer 6.
So somewhere in the middle of these trailers, I realized, holy shit, they're actually just showing the real trailers right now, and I'm missing them. So I missed like half the trailers.
Okay.
I couldn't tell you the names of most or the plots of most of the trailers, but I'm going to do my best.
Okay.
Speaking of people who don't age, or people who maybe have already aged past their ripened state. The Spy Who Dumped Me. It's a Mia Kunis, Kate McKinnon, comedy spy thriller.
I've seen the poster, and Kate McKinnon's in it. I'm in.
Yeah. She seems to be doing the Kate McKinnon thing.
Okay.
Like, she is Kate McKinnon in this, which is fine, because that's funny.
You know, I don't think I've ever seen her. I think I've ever seen Kate McKinnon. I've seen the 37 characters she plays, but I don't think I've even seen an interview of her just like being a human being.
What she does, she's doing more of it in this movie.
Okay. Okay.
I don't know who she is deep down as a human being.
Okay.
I don't know. This movie looks sort of funny.
Okay.
But whatever.
There's an interesting, because I watched 2 weekends ago, my wife and I and my son got a wild hair. We just want to watch Fantastic Mr. Fox. And I'm like, hey, we actually have that Blu-ray. I dug it out of like where our unpacked Blu-rays were down in the basement. And it's a Blu-ray, so it's got these commercials for movies from like 10 years ago, 2008. And there's this one that was... oh my God, I just forgot that I suck at the celebrity names. It's the girl from 30 Rock, Tina Fey, and the guy from The Office.
Which, Michael Scott.
Michael Scott, yes.
It is him?
Yes, it's Michael Scott.
Steve Carell.
And they're in like, you know, they're just a couple, and like, you know, they get caught up in this spy situation. And like, they make that movie every 10 years or so.
Right. Right. They did it with Bill Murray way back in the day, too.
Right. And like, Mr. and Mrs. Smith is kind of that, except for they're both spies. And and like, it looks entertaining. I don't know why I don't see more of them.
Yeah.
Because I don't know. I don't know why. Like, I feel like I don't watch just like regular mainstream comedies anymore. I'm sure that I enjoy them, but it's always got to be some kind of weirdo, weird hook. Like, it's got to be Fred Armisand doing reenactments of old documentaries before.
Yeah.
You know, it's like.
Yeah, I feel like
it's like I reached the stage of comedy masturbation where I got to have a little autoerotic asphyxiation in it. There's got to be some danger. There's got to be some weirdness. There's got to be points where I'm uncomfortable and confused.
Yeah, no, it's that thing about, you know, watching and talking about television and film for so long.
Yeah.
You just start to want something new.
Right. I also think that like that was like the majority of my life, like PG-13 comedies growing up, to where like now I just it's like I was forced to eat vanilla ice cream.
A lot of blue streaks.
Rocky Road and I ain't going back. Going back to vanilla. Fuck your French vanilla and your bean and your golden cream or whatever it is. Okay, Spy Who Shagged Me.
Spy Who Dumped Me.
There we go.
Yeah. I got a new trailer for Venom, which...
Fuck that.
I know you hate talking about
it.
And then some movie whose plot I couldn't tell you. I think Mark Wahlberg's trying to sneak somebody out of the country or something. Mild 22.
Okay. It's just a mild.
Mile.
Oh,
did
mild
I say
22.
Mild? I might have said mild.
It's mild. It's like, you know.
I don't know what that's about.
I had three trailers I've never seen before. One is Operation Finale, which is seemed to be a high budget... Oscar Isaac is in it. Ben Kingsley is in it. Ben Kingsley is starring as this SS officer, Adolf Eichmann, who fled to like Venezuela or one of those countries in the 60s. And I guess some Mossad agents extracted him and they put him on trial. And this is like the story of the Mossad agent who tracks him down and like, you know, interrogates him. And he's got this... the whole trailer looks like it's this Nazi telling this Jew spy, like, these paper-thin excuses for why he can't be judged by human morality, and it's like fucking with the Jewish guy. I'm like, Ben Kingsley says, oh, you say I'm responsible for the death of 6 million, and yet it's justice to kill one man. I'm like, no, but it's a good start. Click, clack, blow. Like, how? How can this sneering Nazi telling you these obviously facile moral quandaries have? He's like, he's not fucking Magneto.
No, he's Ben Kingsley. That's what you hire Ben Kingsley to do. Like, this is Ben Kingsley in every role I've seen him in.
I think this is Ben Kingsley's Waterloo, not the movie about Napoleon where he was at. No, this is like you can't make this Nazi SS officer who architected the Holocaust palatable, man.
He's just pushing his luck. He's seeing how far he can go.
I mean, maybe the movies, but like the whole trailer, I'm like, every time they cut the Kingsley saying, you know, like, how many Jews can even fit into a boxcar? Have you really thought? Like, click, clack, blow. Get this guy out of here.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Maybe it'll sweep the Oscars and I'll look like an idiot. Overlord. So, this is cool. This stars the kid who played Michael in season 2 of The Leftovers.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's a D-Day. Like, it looks just like your standard Band of Brothers, Saving Private Ryan, like, crazy shit, guys getting shot out of airplanes.
Until Ben Kingsley shows up.
Until Ben Kingsley
talks him into joining the SS.
To explain how the Holocaust wasn't that big of a deal, guys. If you just, you know, he's come sip some pina coladas with me in Venezuela, I'll explain the whole thing.
Yeah, Skin Killer has nothing to do with it. It's all about your religion.
And I'm like, this is kind of cool because, like, I've never seen, like, a paratrooper, like, free-falling through, like, flak and, like, you know, what it would be like to, like, God. Just, like, I'm helpless. I'm descending at a slow pace, and there's just metal shrapnel being... And it looked like really sick. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is interesting. And it's also like this black guy, and he's like in a mostly white unit and like, you know, whole fighting for his country, but his country kind of hates him. And I'm like, and then out of the middle of nowhere, fucking aliens and zombies started showing up.
Okay.
And it turns into like one of those Nazis like are experimenting.
Pride and Prejudice and Zombies kind of thing.
Yeah, Nazis are experimenting with forces darker than Ben Kingsley kind of. Or Ben Kingsley. And I'm like, okay, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued. Especially right on the heels of Operation Finale.
Do they just kind of play that as the end of the trailer? Like, yeah, and aliens,
right,
and then it ends?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, that interdimensional cable thing. It's like, you know, this brother jumping into Normandy, and then there's aliens and zombies, and then things get really intense. Like, it's like fast. But it looks really cool and very special effecty and neat like that. Doesn't ask me to consider the logic of a sneering Nazi. Bumblebee.
Oh, yeah, well, we saw this. Okay.
So, this is just nakedly Transformers for girls.
I mean, this is Bumblebee, a Transformers story, right? Like, this is what they did with Han Solo, except in the Transformers universe.
But, like, Bumblebee's, like, he's cuddling this girl, it's very, there's, like, I mean, I realize...
I guess it's Transformers for girls. I don't know. I didn't put that together,
I should say it's not a stereotypically masculine take on Transformers.
Sure.
Because I just realized it sounds sexist as hell to be like, just it's Transformers for girls. But I think it's neat. You know, it's like, you know, Bumblebee can be your best friend too, little girl. And I also like the return to his like more classic vintage Bumblebee looks. Yeah. Like, you know.
The one that Ben Kingsley could ride around in.
right. I think it's, I don't think, I mean, I've been out on the Transformers movies for a long, long time.
Yeah, fuck those movies.
Like, I don't even think I've sat through all of the second one. But yeah.
But maybe there will be a little less transforming, a little less action in this one.
If you're a Gen Xer with like a 9-year-old daughter, and like an 11-year-old son who kind of needs to see that there's other sides of the world, yeah, go take him to see Bumblebee. It'll probably look like it's a good family time. Plus, like, is it a Michael Bay joint? I wanted to see. I should have looked it up because maybe that's a reason to stay home. I don't know. And that's the trailers, which means if you're not a club member, this is where we part ways.
All right. It means it's time for trailers. Nope, not trailers. Spoilers. Both in the RS.
Trailers
confused
full of spoilers.
Me, apparently.
Trailers full of spoilers.
Where do you want to start with this movie? Do we want to talk about some of the good stuff that we really liked?
Okay, yeah. Let's do that.
Because I want to talk about some of those action scenes. Like, it's one that they show in the trailers, and it's a moment that they show in the trailers, but, like, in context, I don't know, it really worked for me. Like, when they're in the bathroom and they're trying to fight this
guy. That bathroom seat's one of the best fist fights I've seen.
Oh, it's
like,
so good.
It's up there, the hallway scene with Daredevil.
And I don't even know how they do it. I don't even think they use camera tricks to really get the impact. Maybe it's like speeding up the kicks and speeding up the punches in just the right way, but the impact, you really feel it. And then when Superman takes off his coat, I'm like, oh, yeah, here we
does
go.
That, but like, shunk, shunk, you know, thing.
Yeah, where he, like, I don't know, primes, he, like, cocks his fist.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was started out awesome, and then he does, like, nothing with him, right? Like, the other guy has kryptonite fists or something because
that guy is the true badass of the movie because he takes on Hunt and whatever the other guy, Walker.
Paul Walker, yeah.
And lives the tale. Well, I guess he doesn't quite live the tale.
He doesn't, but it took three agents to take him out.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
He was a real badass. And the way they shot it's interesting because this is one of the few trailers that gave away a lot of the movie but didn't really reveal much, because I thought that in the bathroom scene that that Hunt and Walker were actually fighting. But they're fighting a common opponent who happens to, from the back, look like Ethan Hunt because he's just in a suit. And I think Ethan was supposed to be impersonating
short,
him.
Short, dark hair, yeah.
So, like, he was kind of dressed similar. So they did some skillful cuts about... You know, but unfortunately, I thought it was extremely clear from the first 20 minutes of the movie that Walker was the agent, that he was the Tinker Tailor soldier and spy.
Yeah, I mean, they confirmed it in my mind. They confirmed it when he goes to Erica and he's like, Ethan's a bad guy.
Right.
Like, no, he's not. You are, quite obviously.
Right. And then, like, I think that was supposed to shake it but the thing is, like, There's two possibilities, because Ethan being the bad guy, I wish Mission Impossible had that kind of balls, but they're not, because Tom Cruise wants to do this until they physically won't let him anymore.
But they can frame it like he is doing the thing that they would label as bad, but for the right reasons,
right? Because he's understood that, like, you know, I'm ready to swallow any amount of malfeasance from my own government.
Sure.
yeah. I could see Ethan Hunt being the force of righteousness against, I'm ready to buy that narrative. But I thought it was extremely obvious, which also undercut a lot of the other bamboozles.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, that made it extremely obvious that Simon Pegg actually, he was falsely confessing to Simon Pegg. So, like, when...
The doctor that they've got at the beginning?
No. I'm talking about when Walker was pouring his heart out
to Lane, yeah.
Yeah, to Lane. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, this obviously is the real Simon Pegg, because Ethan's, like, is at least as smart as me, and I figured this out in, 20 minutes. And,
right.
But also, like, some weird plot holes, like, if he's the big bad guy, why did he get himself why did he almost die in the first 20 minutes of the movie, jumping through lightning? You know, like imagine if, like, Ethan Hunt just wasn't able to save him, and he craters into, like, then there you go.
The movie's over.
Yeah, everything just magically works, and there's no more clusterfucking, right?
Right.
Because he's, like, subtly throwing monkeys, like in that bar, like, they do some clever things, like, he talks a bunch of shit about the IMF and how they're just kids in Halloween masks. And then when he disables the mark for the first time, he uses Ethan Hunt's 3D printing face briefcase to do it, so it's shorting out and it doesn't work properly.
Right.
So he's, like, constantly the monkey wrench, keeping the conventional MI Mission Impossible team shit from actually working.
Yeah.
So if he gets himself killed, then that's the movie.
And they just get the plutonium and go home.
So, like, I get it. Like, you need to establish this guy as, like, this roguish devil may care character, but then he just literally gets zapped by lightning and Ethan has to, I don't know.
there were a couple confusing things around him, like that. And then I felt like it was kind of confusing when, you know, this whole Benji as Lane stunt goes off and he confesses and they realize, okay. I mean, Tom Cruise walks up to him and calls him Lark, says Lark, and then they switch back to calling him Walker. And I'm like, do we ever actually even learn this guy's real name? Because surely somebody who is trying to be a mole inside the CIA is not going to use a real fucking name to do it.
Yeah.
So his name's not Walker.
Yeah.
And if Lark is just a cover
See, I think
identity
that's the thing.
That nobody has.
Yeah.
Then we don't know this guy's name.
Right. I think his real name, because he's obviously, like, I think he was born as an American. It's just that he has, like, there's this cabal of agents around the world who have bought onto this guy's philosophy of, like, I don't know, you got to kill 4/5 of the world's population
right.
to reboot everything. And
great suffering brings about the greatest peace, whatever he says.
Right, yeah. Right. So, I mean, I kind of think that he's Walker. That's his actual born,
okay.
popped out of a womb, gotten identity, and then...
So he's a turned CIA agent. Somebody
yeah.
who got into the CIA willingly
and legally. Which I think is the plot
of
the previous movie, that Scotsman was an MI6 agent who's kind of like, you know, 006. He's
okay.
seen it. He's got his stomach full of
gotcha.
His nation's bullshit, and now he's taken matters into his own hands with all these other weird...
See,
techno-separatists.
Yeah, maybe it's not as confusing then. But the other thing that was confusing about that is in that scene when,
yeah.
you know, they get Erica on the phone and she's like, yep, we got him. Bring everybody in. We're going to sort this out here.
Uh-huh. I kind of thought...
And he says, we got you. And he says, are you sure about that? And then every...
All of her CIA
agents,
team is...
all of them
yeah,
turn.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was like, wait, did a third force just walk in the door? Or is
Angela
or
Bassett
is this,
dirty?
Or is this, like, sublet... Yeah, is... And it was very, very confusing.
Because I felt like it was almost like the kind of shit you see in Fargo where it's like, you know, this police chief that's over the investigator is acting so foolishly and stupidly that whether they're actually the bad guy or not is almost immaterial.
Uh-huh.
Whether they're so incompetent they're indirectly helping the bad guy or they're being paid off, it doesn't really matter because they're certainly – Angela Bassett's character, I felt like there's no way – that after she has the information she has, she just is like, we'll just round everybody up and I'll happen to send a CIA team that is 100% dirty CIA
yeah.
team members.
Yeah, that was too weird for me.
Right.
Like, I didn't quite understand even what was happening. It took mm-hmm. me a while thinking about it just to realize even what happened. And then when I realized what happened, I'm like, that seems dumb.
There are some things I did. Another thing I liked about the movie is, and that this is something that's kind of Mission Impossible lore, is the bad guys taking advantage of the fact that Ethan Hunt is just really squeamish about killing, except
yeah.
when he's not.
Right.
He'll certainly use a half dozen civilians as living wreckage to get away from police officers in an intersection.
Yeah.
But he won't. I thought that the scene where they get their hands on the three balls of plutonium was pretty sweet.
The first one where they lose them?
Yeah, where you think they're going to try to bargain for Vin Rames, and then uh-huh. Ethan Hunt, like, 40 chesses them on that, but then you find out that they anticipated that and were playing 5D chess and used that as a diversion to steal the plutonium. Like, okay, I'm digging that. That's pretty cool. But then, like, when they went to that extended fantasy sequence where he got in with the bad guys and he's going to realize how many cops he's going to have to shoot,
mm-hmm.
like, the whole time I'm like, this isn't Ethan Hunt. And then it turns out that this was just an extended fantasy of him game playing out how that would go before he has his, like, other idea. I'm like, that's literally they pull that shit in the last Twilight. Like, here's this god-awful climactic battle where everyone dies and your heroes compromise, but it was just a fantasy of the bad guy being revealed by the psychic powers of the good guy. I'm like, what? I just watched 10 minutes of action scene that was all just a Saint Elsewhere dream? Get out of mm-hmm. here. And I feel like they did that with the like the nuclear bombs going off in the beginning.
Okay.
You know, like... Yeah. I understand, like, the bamboozle of the bad guy, but they played... There was a whole lot of, like, Tom Cruise just sitting in a conference room being bummed out about the world being... Like, the world's three major religions having their holy cities taken away. Like,
yeah.
Why would he plausibly be doing that? Like, the only point... The bad guy's not...
Psyching himself up?
Maybe,
I don't know. Like,
yeah,
trying to get
I mean,
into character?
But it's like, I don't know that I should
but
be
I'm
having
just making
that...
up excuses
yeah,
for
I shouldn't,
it. Yeah.
I shouldn't be having that debate as I'm watching it.
Right.
You know?
So that scene kind of bummed me out. So I mean, I think it's cool that they were tricking him. I knew from the start that this was all a ruse. But I feel like Mission Impossible needs to move on from some of its crutches. Like... Move on from peeling off the face and revealing that I'm someone else,
mm-hmm.
And I'm using a voice changer, a la Face Off. Like, just get away from that because that is old school. That is very old school. And when I think Mission Impossible, I don't think old school, but I'm starting to. Because I expected when they showed Wolf Blitzer, you know, reading this thing, I expected it to be revealed that they're using digital technology to map Wolf Blitzer's face into this video of somebody else, right? Because that technology exists today.
Sure.
And I'm like, you are stuck in the 1960s with your spy craft here with these plastic faces.
They're
and,
like super advanced, but yeah. Yeah,
I mean, they're super advanced, but they're... But that same gimmick has been used. Like, let's get into the 21st century here and make Mission Impossible about the spycraft as shaped by the new technology, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, get more into that. Yeah. But maybe that's just what I want. I just felt like it was a letdown when Wolf Blitzer actually shows up. I'm like, you don't need to get Wolf Blitzer. You can do this all, and Wolf Blitzer wouldn't know anything about it. Uh-huh. Like, the Wolf Blitzer wouldn't be a liability, essentially. Right. If you just use digital tech.
Speaking of Wolf Blitzer as a liability, I want to go on my standard rant of, like, I don't understand why erstwhile, or like why quote-unquote respected journalists let their image be used for fake news in an era where increasingly a lot of the country is skeptical of journalism and, like... Why would you do that? Like,
you want to hold yourself up as a bastion of integrity.
I think it's interesting that, like, even congressmen, like representatives from some shithole wherever in the country that you can think of, or some, even the liberal, if you want to go the other direction, liberal elite, coastal elite congressmen and senators, you never see them. Like, they're never just, like, chilling in the background. Like, they're never haranguing Superman in, like, real-life politicians because they know there's a bit of a gravitas there that... And they always, like, you know, it's always Kevin Spacey, or, well, probably won't be Kevin Spacey for a long time, but not forever. But it's Willem Dafoe, or it's Kathy Keener, or it's something. It's some serious person playing this. Because why do we get real life journalists to get on something fake and lend it legitimacy? I don't understand. Yeah. It's like they don't even take their own profession seriously.
I don't know. Maybe it's a big paycheck,
but. That just makes them the kind of whores that people say they are.
Exactly. That's what I mean. They need to hold themselves up as a bastion of integrity.
And I think Wolf is doing okay. I don't think Wolf is a hungry journalist trying to bootstrap like a guerrilla journalist operation. You know, he's not strapped for funds.
He's just Camille Spreaker.
It's inexcusable. Sure. You and like Chris Matthews, all you guys that get on these shows for what it is ego stroking, or your corporate masters are telling you to, because this is all a joint Fox, MSNBC, Universal, Comcast bullshit now.
Because they own you. Yeah.
Either way, it's not a good look. It's not a good look, Wolf.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is just Simon Pegg with a silly rubber mask. Okay, that's like, you know, start cast, like, I get it. You can put in, like, a MINN news thing and, like, have some serious dude in a silver wig, and I will buy him as a respected journalist. I don't need Wolf Blitzer.
Speaking of letters, you mentioned the IMF earlier.
Mm-hmm.
All I can think of when I hear IMF is an International Monetary Fund.
Yes, same here.
Do you know what IMF actually stands for in this universe?
The Impossible Mission
Force. Yeah.
Yeah. That's probably from...
That's a little cringy. It's from the old...
It's his DNA from the old 60s spy show that was never supposed to be taken seriously.
Yeah. And now I still can't take it seriously.
It's just like James Bond having like an evil organization that calls himself Spectre. Like that's Cobra. Like you're not even one step away from being a cartoon villain organization.
Mm-hmm.
That's not how the real world works.
You know, we talked about like the car chase scenes.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a little much when the motorcycle chase goes right into a new and even more over the top, maybe car chase. Like, they back-to-back these two action scenes, and I was like, that's maybe a little much. But I thought that the motorcycle chase was excellent, even in just, like, its visual effects. Like, when Tom Cruise is riding around, you know, the Arc de Triomphe or whatever it's called, and he's riding in the wrong direction of traffic, and there are just cars whizzing past him. I thought that looked so good.
Yeah.
I felt like he was actually in that location.
The mechanics of the car chase were really good, and I read a couple one review in particular said that what they thought most impressive is through technology or careful blocking, like, these are some of the more crowded streets you'll see a car chase. Because usually, like, you'll see some stage traffic or some, but like this looked like a vibrant modern city in like the middle of the day, like kind of wall to wall traffic. And the motorcyclist in me is wanting to know why he's like dirt biking around corners, putting his foot down. But it was, it was exciting.
Yeah.
I think it's funny that the only time Ethan Hunt can get hit by a car is when he's within 50 foot of his destination.
Right. He's within crawling distance.
Yeah, yeah. So just in case he breaks his ankle or his ribs. I also like that, didn't he break his ankle and his ribs in this movie?
Did he?
Because I thought at the end where he's like, oh, easy, I think I broke my ribs, I thought that was pretty funny. Like the real-life nods to...
They had to film that final scene in a hospital bed because Tom Cruise is so busted
right?
up.
I heard that the insurance payout for Tom Cruise breaking his ankle was $70 million.
Oh, my God.
And they used that shot in the film. They used a shot of him breaking his ankle because it was when he's jumping from one building to the next. And there's one where he looks like he like awkwardly just jackknifed himself into the edge. He caught his foot wrong and it just rolled it up, like... fractured, and he got up and ran away with a broken leg, like Tom Cruise.
Yeah,
like I submit him as maybe he's the only one that actually took Scientology seriously.
Right,
like him and L. Ron are the only ones. Like, no, you, if you actually clear the thetans, man, you can live forever and run on broken bones. But like the point I'm making is, Are we going to ever see Tom Cruise do this stuff again? Because an argument can be made that now the insurance company's actually paid out this much money that the next film, they're just like, you just can't do this, dude. No, you can't. Yep. You can't.
Maybe.
Because shutting down for 8 weeks costs a shit ton of money.
You know what? I bet if that happens, Tom Cruise will personally back it. He'll insure himself.
That would be interesting.
He'll be like, look, if I break my ankle, I will pay you guys $100 million. Because who gives a fuck? I'm richer than God.
I got a $100 million bond. I'm putting in this account. And
just because I want to do this. Yeah, I love it.
That's the way forward. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just let him take care of it. And Tom Cruise, self-insure.
Maybe he can just make his next movie himself, just fund it entirely himself.
Right. I mean, he has been the executive producer on this thing since number two, and he's like involved, I guess, in picking out the director.
Just put your money where your work is, Mr. Cruise.
By the way, this director, Christopher McQuarrie, he's very good at filming this action. He's done several Mission Impossibles. He's done the Jack Reacher. His first, his directorial debut is Way of the Gun, which I still think holds up as like a very avant-garde, low-budget action flick. It's kind of like similar to the Fast and the Furious. It's like, where do they go from here? Because it's not hard to keep outdoing yourselves in stunts. The trick, and something that the Fast and Furious kind of sometimes does well, sometimes not, is like, where do you find the emotional heart? Mm-hmm. Where are the bones that you hang all these actions so people actually give a shit? Because I really didn't care in the third act about Tom Cruise or not, Ethan Hunt's ex-wife and Michelle Monaghan and her Wes Bentley. Like, as soon as I saw Wes Bentley show, I'm like, is he going to be working for what was the name of the organization? Archangel? Oh, the Apostles.
Apostles, yeah.
Because him and his weirdly manicured goatee and beard, like, he's a villain.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, in the, like, after all's said and done, he's going to pull a knife on Michelle and it's going to be, like, some kind of. But no, it never happened. Yeah. He's just, like, a really gullible husband of this guy. Because I'm like, the way he said it at the end is like, oh, you miraculously survived your Alpine the helicopter crash, like, blah, 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 on the way to your summit on ass kicking or whatever you're doing. Like, they didn't go there.
I think he's in the know when the CIA shows up, when Erica finds him on the mountain or whatever and brings him back. I think he's in the know at that point, but it took a while.
Mm. So the last fake out where Tom Cruise is hanging off the rock, which I did enjoy the whole, like, yeah, Ethan Hunt actually just does this shit for fun in his spare time. If you've seen Mission Impossible 2, he just climbs sheer rock faces.
Yeah.
So, like, when the chips are on the line, forget about it.
Mm-hmm.
When he's hanging off and, like, the bright white light is hitting his face and it turns out it's the sunset because you think it's a nuke, it's the nuke going off.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like that was maybe a fake out too many. Like, no one really believed that.
I guess I didn't view it as a fake out. I viewed it as a did it or didn't happen moment. Like, it was giving you a second to make up your mind about whether or not he made it. But everybody knows, of course,
he made it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And there's a couple things where, like, I thought the big red hook hanging up the helicopter, like, as soon as I saw it, I'm like, that's going up Superman's nose hole. That's going to, like, just brutally rip his face off.
They did a conspicuous close-up of it.
And sure enough, it does.
Yep.
Like I said, some of it, like, it's really well done. Like, I really liked Ethan Hunt in a helicopter with Superman using a machine gun with trace around. Like, that was super fun. Like, a little bit much that this is apparently his first time piloting a helicopter.
And he can pull out of those kind of nose dive
like
spirals.
Helicopters, not the most easy thing in the world to pilot. That's true. Don't kind of want to fly, and this guy is going to be taking him barrel rolls and all this kind of, but I don't know.
That's the thing, and with a very trained pilot. So the one thing they did in that scene that I really liked is Ethan Hunt doesn't give a fuck, and he'll fly right down below cloud level, like through the clouds when there are mountains below, or who knows what below, and the other pilot's like, no.
Right.
No, I don't know what's down there.
Yeah.
This is a trained guy. He knows that that could be death.
Yeah.
Ethan Hunt doesn't give a
fuck. And it kind of sets
or doesn't know better, either way.
It's kind of interesting because they set this up with Walker and Hunt that, like, Walker's like, I don't give a fuck. I'll jump through clouds and lightning and not give a shit. And Ethan's, like, more of like, hey, we need to do a different plan. But then, like, they're both, like, you just know that in the end, and it's, like, he's got 5 minutes to disable this bomb in this very convoluted, weird way that it's so funny because, like, I feel like the whole diffusing process of that bomb was written to enable the third act.
It was, yeah.
Like, what an obscure software flaw that causes the failure condition of these wild three things to be, like, it's, like the whole software is written to where once this thing is armed, you can't disarm it.
Right.
Unless you meet the worst case scenario of all the systems failing, and then they just kind of like, come what?
Yeah.
That's not how software is
They don't
is
bother to explain how it works.
Right.
They just say, just, here are the objectives. Yeah.
There's the rules of the universe. Go do it. The White Widow, I didn't realize this, and this is the nice thing about doing the first run movies a couple days later. But you're supposed to understand that she's the daughter of the Vanessa Graves Max character from the first movie. And I guess they established
that movie I saw 20 years ago.
I guess they established, but they don't really do anything with it, you know. And also, like, if I'd have known that, I'd be like, well, then how the hell does she not know who Ethan Hunt is?
Yeah.
Like, her mom wouldn't be like, tell her that, like, she's this famous international spy power broker, and her mom was the same, and she would never
probably
tell her.
Probably she didn't expect Ethan Hunt to be doing it 20 years later. It's like, what? Ethan who? He's still in the game?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Right.
How is he not dead and or too old
for
this?
She saw his file, but his age progressed, and he looks like he looks like Wilford Brimley. So she was just completely guard down. Who is this 28-year-old man in a tux who's calling himself Lark? Oh, my God. Or Lane, or whoever the hell he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But the thing is, like, I like this movie because 10 years ago, or I like how movies are going, 10 years ago, Ethan Hunt would have just escort this poor woman off of the ball, out of the club, and she would be, you know, the damsel in distress. This movie, because it's made in 2018, she whips out a sweet butterfly knife and makes the point that, like, she certainly appreciates Tom Cruise's assistance, just the same way, like, if that was Jason Statham.
Yeah,
like they'd kick ass out of their way. How am I trying to say this? They would kick ass out of the bar, out of their way of the bar.
Yeah, something like that. Together. I know what you're trying to say.
And it wouldn't be like Jason Statham needs to be saved, but I just like that. Like, because she's there's got to be some reason that, like, all these underworld types are following her. Mm-hmm. All this law of the jungle might makes right. You know, you're only as powerful as your weakest link kind of thing. Like, there's got to, and it's because she'll fuck you up with that butterfly knife.
They play her brother as kind of a joke, and I don't understand why.
Yeah.
Because he never shows himself to be incompetent.
Yeah. He just...
They just make fun of him.
Right, because
and
he
she
just,
agrees, so...
Yeah, and I also... I don't know.
Maybe, like, that's a last movie kind of thing that I didn't see. And
I think she's in on the joke more than she should be. Because, like, a lot of the movie, like, it seems preposterous that, like, Tom Cruise can be like, well, I just knew that plan was going to be a bloodbath, so I completely redid the plot and all this, that, and the other, and I don't know. And then there, I also like the relationship between Hunt and the female MI6 agent, whose name I don't remember.
Who, can I just say, I feel like they did a bad job casting this movie.
Oh, really?
Because I could, so I haven't seen a Mission Impossible movie in 20 years, almost. Okay. And I didn't know any of these characters. So going in, I was very confused.
Rames. You knew Ving Rhames.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise have been there since the very beginning.
He's really hot about the IBM ThinkPads. He's all about the ThinkPads.
Is that a Mission Impossible thing from 20 years ago?
Yeah, it is.
Okay. But the his ex-wife and this Ilsa agent look almost identical to me. Half the movie, I couldn't tell that they weren't the same person until...
They do
until
look
we
like...
got toward the end. Like... Ethan Hawke has...
They have the same
kind
of upturned rabbit nose.
Ethan Hunt has a type.
And, sure. It's this
for
woman.
For sure.
It's this,
And I feel like that was maybe a poor casting choice just for that. Like, they were excellent, but, like, it was very confusing to me.
She also felt like off-brand Jovovich to me.
Like every Ilsa, time, the agent?
Yeah,
the
whenever she was in the like a motorcycle helmet and all you could see were her eyes, I'm like, well, this is... You could... Why not just cast Jovovich in this?
Because she's not a Scientologist and she's like 40.
She's staunchly. Yeah. Oh, and I don't know because I've seen her recently and she still like looks like she could believably kick ass. And it's
essentially
she created that kind of like super spy female archetype in cinema.
Resident Evil, Ultraviolet, like all that stuff.
Yeah, like why get the drugstore brand? Get the real deal.
Maybe she wanted $70 million and Tom Cruise was like, nah, I'm going to roll my ankle.
Could be. That's right. That's right. Hey, we can't afford Joe. I got to do my own stunts. We can't afford.
They did. They filmed a whole lot of scenes with Mia Jovovich, and then when Tom Cruise broke his ankle,
they
had to
cut
go back
out.
And
had to digitally paint
we
her.
We can't
out.
Afford to keep you on the rest of the film, Mia.
I feel like we're playing short shrift to some of the. But what do you say about the stunts? The stunt scenes,
and they're amazing.
Stunt scenes, except they're amazing.
Yeah.
There's a couple, like, I think also that they have to kind of decide, because there's a couple that they fell on the wrong side of the Fast and Furious uncanny action valley. Like, there's action that's, like, gritty and realistic, like the first Mission Impossible, the first
Jason Bourne
movies, like when they rebooted James Bond, like everything's like, you know, it's like parkour and it's like peak human ability and believable, and then like you go a little past that and you're in the like uncanny valley where this is just preposterous and dumb, but if you keep going you start pulling out the other side and it's just like, okay, these characters are Looney Tunes, there's no gravity, and I felt like with Walker and Hunt crashing in the helicopters at the end, there was a little bit like this dude wrecked in a helicopter and all he's got are broken ribs and some facial scratches.
Yeah.
Kind of same way that like Elsa took a log to the face and all she has is like just a light attractive smudge on her forehead.
And I mean, probably the broken ribs happened because of the punches.
Could be.
Like, I don't think he got injured at all in that helicopter crash, which is ridiculous.
Right. I mean, they make Henry Cavill, and I always think he does look like he's a brick house, but like they do make him seem like a monster in this movie.
Uh-huh.
And what's really a delight is I think he's probably like 6'2", 6'3". Tom Cruise is like 5'4".
Right.
In this movie, they don't try to make Tom Cruise seem like he's tall. Like they just make Henry Cavill look like he's Andre the goddamn giant.
No, I think it's a point. Like these people are not physical equals.
Yeah.
Right? Like he's gonna get
this
Ethan
is scalpel
Hunt will get
versus the scalpel sledgehammer thing.
Right.
Yeah.
But I honestly didn't feel like they made Henry Cavill as impressive as they maybe should have.
Yeah, they nerfed him whenever he had the fight
the Lark guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he takes
suddenly...
off his jacket, and I'm like, the fight is over.
Henry
Cavill is just going to put him down.
Yeah.
He's going to pound him into the ground.
Unless you have kryptonite, it's going to be done here. Hunt.
It doesn't happen there. It doesn't happen in any of the fights with Ethan. It's like, I guess I never really was that impressed by that character.
And I think they could have, like...
Because he's a hammer. I mean, they call him the fucking hammer
in this
movie.
Yeah.
I wanted to see him hammer somebody, and he really didn't get the chance.
Ethan shouldn't be able to win in a straight-up fight, or they should be able to, like, maybe sell the story if he got a little bit worse in the helicopter accident than Hunt did. So he's, like, kind of like they did in the first Star Wars sequel, where you know, Daisy Ridley stands up to Kylo Ren, but he's also just almost died because Chewbacca shot him with his crossbow, and so he's like limping and not at full strength. Or same, you know, there's got to be a reason. Like in Bespin, Darth Vader's just playing with Luke Skywalker. He's not really trying to defeat. There's got to be a reason the hero can prevail over this hulking brute, and it can't just be because the stakes have never been higher.
Right. I mean, having more will than the other person is definitely a thing.
I guess, look
at Rocky, but
sure,
like,
sure.
I didn't even feel that.
Yeah.
In this, you know.
Yeah.
Although I think they did a pretty good job selling it when he got into the helicopter,
mm-hmm.
and he was like, "This is it," you know, like here's all the marbles. This is what I'm playing for here, and I will not fail. And even to the point of like, I really love the close up shots that they did of the alarms on the helicopter.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like first the board lights up with just a couple,
the
fuel's low, uh-huh. whatever. And by the end of it, they're doing close ups of a flashing solid board with every alert that the helicopter has. It was, and Tom Cruise just like hold together.
And
he's trying to
literally
fucking
on fire.
Ram him.
Yeah,
literally.
No,
no, it was awesome. But you're right; it is way over the top.
He's going to die to keep his ex-wife from being evaporated in a nuclear holocaust because she didn't deserve that.
Yeah, the third of the world's population, no big deal, but his ex-wife.
Right,
yeah,
right. Yeah, that was also I kind of like the, and this is probably another international audiences thing, but like. The part of the world they were threatening was, like, it's essentially China, Russia, and India,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that's, like, I think it was, like, two-thirds of the world's population.
There's a lot. There are a lot of people over there.
So it's, like, these guys are, like, you know, I thought that was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
That it wasn't, like, the Hoover Dam or it wasn't the eastern seaboard of the United States. It was, like, this place that's going to fuck up and irradiate the water source for all of India, China, and Russia.
Yeah.
So that seemed like it'd be a catastrophe. Although I also, for the 3 seconds I bought the whole Tom Cruise fucked up and the Vatican, Mecca, and Jerusalem were nuked, I'm like, What would that do geopolitically?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It did start to get my gears spinning on, what would be the purpose of that? I mean, anarchy is what that guy's after, right? And I think that would cause it.
Yeah, like or like if to the extent that these religions are in conflict, like taking their king pieces off the board, like what would that do to like society, to have Judaism, Islam, and Christianity just kicked in the nuts like that.
Yeah. It's an interesting idea, and I really thought they were going to go that direction until I realized.
Right, and I'm this is a bamboozle.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Because the other thing, I'm like, I don't know where they go with the plot, because this is like one something like even Tom Clancy back when he was alive would be like, I don't know, guys, this might be a little far-fetched and ridiculous.
Uh-huh.
Because that's like I've heard that frequently, like, you know, people that haven't given the matter much thought, it's like, oh, we should just like nuke all this stuff, and I don't know, but it was kind of exciting when I thought that's what they're going for.
Yeah, that's all I got.
Less rubber faces for Mission Impossible.
That's
74.
What I'm saying. Yeah, go more digital, go more like technologically advanced, not just nukes.
Yeah, and now that like they're like the thing is like I actually kind of preferred The Rock's Towering Inferno, which I know is an unpopular opinion because like people seem like they're just done with The Rock being in 5 action movies this year. I get it. But to me, like what I enjoyed about that, because the set pieces weren't as high stakes and just awesome, you know, awesome. And I don't think The Rock is as good as a star as Tom Cruise is, but that movie had heart and it was like effortless about it. Like every single scene, I really cared about The Rock and his kids and his wife. If Mission Impossible is going to continue to be something that's exciting for me and not just a slightly more serious Fast and the Furious, they got to figure out that heart thing. Even the Fast and Furious, I feel like, you know, Walker dying and them being able to do that interesting thing about Vin Diesel's kid and like everybody coming together and making it specifically not like this nebulous concept of family, but like family.
Yeah.
That was a real shot in the arm. I thought that franchise needs I felt like they tried to go back that with, like, you know, Tom Cruise trying to protect his ex-wife kind of business. But, like, I don't know. How are they going to do that? Like, because it looks like Cruise and this Elsa spy are going to, like, where does that go to? Like, she's done with him. She's out of MI6 now. Is he out of IMF? Are they going to go rogue?
I don't know if he's out. Oh, you know who is out?
Who's
out? We didn't talk about at all. Alec Baldwin.
Oh,
he
yeah.
He gets stabbed and killed, apparently.
This is because he was like the Angela Bassett in the previous movie, I understand. Yeah. And then he got promoted to run an IMF because he admired him so much. And then he goes out. Yeah. So there was a little bit of stakes.
Yeah.
I thought maybe I thought in the final moments of the movie that maybe Vin Rhames would get out because he's getting, like, apologies to Danny Glover, too old for this shit.
Yeah. I think he is. Vin Rhames has seen his action days come and go.
He was never, like, the actions. He was always the brains of the operation.
Right.
Like, you know, the guy was in the van. So I guess he could keep doing that, but does he want to? I mean, I guess, why wouldn't he?
I don't know.
If every 3 years I heard Tom Cruise has got $200 million burning a hole in his pocket and wants to get the gang back together, and I just get to fly to exotic locations and make fun of Simon Pegg and sit in a van and do some green screen explosions for $1 million, I'd do it. So, yeah, never mind.
Okay.
Forget it. You fire me as agent, Ving. You keep doing you. I mean, they just got to figure out a way to, I guess, tie all these set pieces together in an emotionally engaging way.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, like, every part that wasn't just full, you know, pedal to the metal, I was kind of bored and distracted. Fortunately, 80% of the movie, 85% of the movie was pedal to the metal. So
yeah.
I don't know that we have decided what we're going to be doing next. There's a lot of interesting possibilities. Mm. There's some, like, really crazy, silly shit coming out next month, like The Meg. There's other stuff that's maybe more serious but won't be as much fun. Jim and I got to debate that. We'll try to have a list out soon. But thank you for listening to this first-run movie. Thank you for being a club member, and we will see you when you see. We'll see you. Until then, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
Later.